One of the things we wanted to do was not just have an intellectual happening. We didn't want it just to be academic and intellectual. That was important, but we also wanted it to be experiential. So we tried to choose a cross-section of lecture style information research, as well as men just simply telling their stories. It's an interesting kind of smorgasbord of what's going on for men, and it just touches on a few things, but it opens up a dialogue, and we wanted to provide a forum for having this kind of dialogue and this kind of conversation, and a place where men and women together can come together and start talking about these things. I think primarily my counseling work with men and also my own work on myself. It became really obvious when I started working with other men that there are so many issues that men struggle with, but it's very difficult to get to them often. And when we started working with the students here, and when we began the Journeyman's group for students on campus, we started finding that the young men on campus really wanted a place to talk about these things, that there was a whole population of young men who wanted to talk about what was going on internally, not just externally, but that it was really hard to find a place to do that.
The normalization of shaming and blaming is something we do culturally to boys, as it's how we socialize boys into masculinity and into manhood. And part of the scripts that you would recognize the normalization of shaming and blaming in would be things like we accuse boys of being gay if they don't match certain stereotypes of masculinity. Girls will do it in their intimate relationships when they will insult a boy who may not be ready for sex by accusing him of being gay, or will not. We say a guy hasn't made it if he can't take care of himself. You know, he can't, or if he gets beat up by a girl, or he's a sissy. If he is abused, we often minimize the victimization experiences of boys and say, you know, why didn't you take care of yourself, or why did you let that happen? You know, boys hear messages all the time from the culture. You know, you're not tall enough, you're not muscular enough, you don't drive a fast enough car. You know, the short male is the perennial whipping boy for all kinds of jokes and gags. And also, too, there are certain stereotypes about boys that we believe that all males are ready for sexual experiences from the early stages of their lives, and that if an older person, an older female in particular, teaches a young boy about sex, that's called initiation into life. Whereas if you flip the genders around and it was an adult man doing it to a young girl, we would see it for what it is. It's a sexual exploitation or outright sexual abuse. So, and when we talk about aggression, we often say that, you know, boys are the aggressive sex, when all of the research that's done on aggression worldwide says that both genders are equally aggressive. And certainly up to about the age of puberty, that manifests in pretty much the same ways. A lot of it's verbal. A lot of it is indirect forms of aggression. After puberty, I think you see much more of a distinct representation of boys in the physical violence part, and girls are more in the indirect forms of aggression and violence. But when we say that that boys are the aggressive sex, we leave out, of course, if they're ever victimized through violence, then it's almost like an anomaly, because if they're the perpetrators, how do we deal with them when they're victimized? So there's a lot of I think we have a lot of the stories that have been told about violence and victimization in our culture have come from women, because they were the first ones to name their experiences and have much more permission to talk about their victimization experiences. That's neither good or bad, that's just the way the history has unfolded. And boys are struggling to have their voice added to those discussions, because they have to get over the hurdle of the fact that simply identifying themselves as victims is a diminishment of their status as boys or young men. So these are just a few examples of the kind of of normalization, of shaming and blaming that goes on. And you see it in assumptions around masculinity. You see it in the way boys are treated in the school system. There are a lot of folks who would claim that girls get a raw deal in the school system. I would argue both genders get a raw deal in the school system, and sometimes for similar and sometimes for different reasons. But we know a lot more about girl stories because we have women who are advocating. We don't have the same advocates coming forward and talking about boy stories, so their stories have yet to really achieve any kind of public awareness or professional awareness for that matter. So there's lots of ways boys are silenced. There's lots of messages they get that are that blame them and shame them. And they are invisible to us because they're normal, natural parts of parenting, schooling. They're in the academy and the way we think about how we do our research, the questions we ask. There's lots of silences and gaps and holes in our understanding. I think the most important thing for those who believe in real social justice and real equality have got to be prepared to step back from the discussions or the discourse on equality and start including boys' stories. We need to be critical of newspaper stories that blame and shame boys. We need to, in our dating violence or our relational violence literature, add boys' stories so that they can account for their experiences of being shamed in their relationships. We need to look at the normalization of violence towards male children in terms of abusive child-rearing practices. We tend to hit boys more. We need to look at a lot of the ways we classify mental illnesses and other disorders in boys when those diagnostic categories actually hide victimization experiences of those boys. And in fact, a lot of what we label as conduct disorders or oppositional defiant disorders are boys simply acting out as a result of a history of abuse. So a lot of male victims hide in those categories. So those in the helping professionals have got to learn that boys' language of emotions, depression, may be different from girls. In the school system, we've got to recognize that boys are starting to fall behind the girls in terms of school completion, school failure. Those are just a few of the forums in which I think we need to start making some changes.
Well, because I'm one of these, I'm an Anglican, and the Anglicans, they don't have confession, and they don't have a forgiving God. The Anglicans are, you're born an asshole and you stay an asshole, so you do everything you can to not feel like an asshole. I'm open to these ideas. I'm quite porous. I'm a reporter, I take things in, and I'm susceptible. But the result is that people, have no compunction or hesitation to tell me exactly what they feel. And, I don't want to be responsible for the oppression of women. I don't think I am. But many women would tell me that I'm part of the problem because I'm a man. I think that's unfair. That's one of the reasons I think about it. I think about it because the rules have changed, because my father was a great father, but a quiet man, and who I can't do things the way he did them because the society's different, He went to work all the time, worked at work and was great at work and could be controlled and stuff. I can't do that because my wife works too. So I have to figure it out anew, I want to be as good a dad, as good a husband as he was, but in different circumstances. So that's, it's an interesting challenge. It's like a hobby, Philosophy is a hobby. Philosophy is plumbing.
Being an authentic man, is that what that's all about?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be a liar. You don't want to fool yourself. You don't want to fool anybody else. I mean, I don't think you do. It's the way to get sick, mentally or physically. Yes, I think it's an issue. It was an issue when I went to university. I studied with Alan Bloom, who was a conservative, but which I didn't always agree with, but who was a very disciplined thinker. And I went to an English boarding school too. I mean, a Canadian, but on the English style, where rhetoric and thinking and writing were emphasized, clarity, detachment. I know those are just intellectual habits, and I can't be rid of them. I'd like to see if it's possible to uphold them, and that being authentic is part of that, I think. You have to be able to explain yourself and why you do things the way you do. And my tendency, like many people's tendency, is to possibly avoid that. But like most people, this, if you don't deal with it, it nags at you, and sometimes it pops out unexpectedly. I don't know. In a way, it feels like, it's kind of like, there have been a number of great conversations in the history of the world. The conversation over slavery was one of them. The conversation about having, the Second World War was one of them. There's been one about industrialism. I think the conversation about sharing politics and power between men and women as a result of women's liberation, about the end of a kind of slavery, I think that could be one of the great conversations. I'd like to be part of it. I mean, in a little way. I'd like to at least, get my bin in. The media wants to sell a lot of papers, The media wants to get a lot of people watching the TV, a lot of people using the internet, and to get them there, you've got to say, all right, I've got something that interests all of you. I've got an answer that speaks to everybody. Everybody needs this. Whereas in my experience of talking to people, to men in particular, is that they're better off if they go through their own trial by fire, their own challenge, whether it's climbing a mountain or building a bookshelf or planting a garden or becoming an expert on apple trees or raising your daughter and teaching her to ski or reading political diaries or whatever you can become obsessive and compulsive about, those are those are better ways of doing it. They're individual responses. I think anybody who looks to TV to help them out, I just don't trust it. We all want to think the same thing. We all want one gadget that allows us to communicate that one thing over and over again. There's this incessant conversation that goes on via cell phone, via this, via that, all these intrusive things. But 95% of what gets said is the same 5% of information, or same 5% of human experience repeated again and again and again and again and again. 95% of the world is untouched. That's the way to find yourself, is to find the stuff that interests you that no one else is talking about. And there's tons of it. So why go with the mass media? Why go with, network television? Yuck.
I think it would be learning that it is important to figure out what makes you tick. And definitely as being a man, it's harder for us. Well, it's a different process than it would be if you were a woman. And there aren't examples of how to do that. It's not in the media. It's not prevalent. Men aren't generally expected to do the self-discovery thing or to be emotional or spiritual. So I think listening to the panelists and just seeing what kind of being here and experiencing the workshops kind of showed me the importance of always embarking on that kind of journey, figuring out what you're all about, and that it is rewarding in the end to step back and try to better yourself.
We all sort of, male and female, just we all, as people have faced the same sort of problems, but we just do it in, different ways. And I guess for some reason, I don't know why, men are sort of in general, not specifically, they're more sheltered with a lot of different issues. And I guess trying to get at that, and, you know, like trying to break down that barrier is what's really important. So we all have the same issues, you know, with, a career, or, you know, trying to find somebody, you know, to marry or whatever. But, you know, just we male and female just generally get at those from different, look at those from different perspectives. So just trying to have everybody looking at the same issue from the same perspective really sort of helps, I think.
Personally, what I'd really like them to come away with is a little bit better notion of the reality for men about what's going on internally. Just a taste of it. Just to start to realize that what we see on the outside is just that, it's the outside. And that men are human beings, and we've been taught to put on this great heavy coat of armor on the outside, and that's what the world sees, and the rest of it we hold inside. And we struggle with the same issues that women struggle with. We struggle with intimacy and relationships and love and spirituality and sexuality and shame and powerlessness, internal powerlessness that we feel like we have to compensate for out in the world. So a little bit better notion of that men are on internally, there really is a human being inside, and men are more and more starting to struggle to let that out and overcome the social training that we've received that is really dehumanizing, that has caused men to have to deny huge parts of their humanity. So we want to open the dialogue.